How will a shakeup in public radio affect budget negotiations?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. As the budget debate wages in Washington, we're likely to see more heat coming from GOP lawmakers over the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is a prime funding mechanism for public radio. Today, Vivian Schiller, NPR's president and CEO, resigned her position in the wake of comments an NPR executive made in a meeting that was secretly videotaped. The fundraising exec told two people who were disguised as possible contributors that, among other things, he'd be glad if federal funding of public media went away. NPR is in no way affiliated with Marketplace's owners, APM, American Public Media. But both companies do take a very limited amount of federal funding. Steve Behrens is editor at Current, which is the newspaper that serves public media people. He's with us now from Washington. Good morning.
Good morning.
So House Republicans are pushing to defund the CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. What's that going to do to a radio network such as NPR or even a production company like APM?
It's going to cut into the money available for all the producers. The stations pay more than a third of NPR's budget to buy programs from it. And if they have less money, then NPR will have less money. Same with all the other programs. Some of them are more dependent on federal money than others. The more marginal ones will go away.
When you say marginal, you're talking about marginal programs or marginal stations?
Both, actually. The smaller stations get more of their money from the feds than the big ones. The average is around 10 or 15%. Little stations may get 30%.
So with Vivian Schiller now out, does it change the debate, though, do you think, as far as what Congress is looking at?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the critics will still be able to point to the same problems. They just won't have her to kick around anymore.
Steve Behrens, the editor of Current, which is the newspaper of public media here in the public radio and public television system. We thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
President Obama and British Prime Minister David Cameron have agreed to look at a whole host of options in response to the crisis in Libya. Besides any kind of military intervention on the table, the British have drawn up a financial crackdown, which would block Libya and the regime of Muammar Gaddafi from profiting off of any oil sales. From London, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
The world has already tightened the screw on Gaddafi's personal finances. Many of his assets and those of his family and cronies have been frozen. But the country is still producing some oil, and analysts reckon the regime is still making at least $150 million a week selling it on the world market. Now the Brits are urging the United Nations to stop this flow, to divert the cash into a special account. The account would be run by the UN on behalf of the Libyan people. Speaking in Parliament, Foreign Secretary William Hague spelt out the benefit of such a plan.
To reduce the financial flows to the Gaddafi regime, which of course may be used to support the level of violence and attempts to suppress the protests.
Yesterday, the European Union stepped up the financial pressure on Gaddafi. It imposed sanctions on the country's main investment arm, with assets worth $70 billion. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Markets are off about 0.25% for the S&P, the NASDAQ down 0.5%. The Dow pretty much flat at 12,209. The Senate yesterday, 95-5, overwhelmingly passed a bill that overhauls the nation's patent laws and boosts funding for the U.S. Patent Office.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD as well as online savings account and money market account. Learn more at allybank.com. By Microsoft, providing comprehensive business solutions for the cloud. You can learn more at microsoft.com/cloud. And by Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com.
The term green chemistry tackles exactly what you suspect it does, making the stuff we use every day less toxic. Marketplace's Sarah Gardner reports from the Sustainability Desk. One of green chemistry's founders is out to prove you can make money with it, too.
John Warner was a top industrial chemist when his 2-year-old son died from a rare birth defect.
Lying awake at night, the evening of my son's funeral, staring at the ceiling, asking myself, what if something I touched caused my son's disease? What if something that I got an award for ultimately caused my son's death?
Warner and his friend Paul Anastas developed green chemistry in the 90s. Their idea was that industrial processes don't have to be bad for humans and the environment. They could be benign by design, so to speak. Warner preached that gospel for years as a chemistry professor. Now he's trying to prove green chemistry can work in the real world.
And so in this lab over here, we have people working on large object ceramics.
Ceramics as in bathroom fixtures. Warner now heads a small startup company north of Boston called the Warner Babcock Institute. It helps its clients, from drug companies to cosmetic firms, by coming up with non-toxic, more energy-efficient, and less wasteful ways to make their products. And those clients want to save money by doing it. Warner says that's possible. After all, toxicity carries a pretty high price tag.
Look at the amount of money we spend in hazardous waste. Look at the amount of money in storage. Look at the money in transport. If you have a hazardous material, it just costs so much money.
Warner doesn't divulge his client list or revenues, but says the company has worked with 18 clients so far and is cash positive. Among their successes, reducing the amount of chemical waste from making a Parkinson's disease drug and figuring out a way to use less energy in making solar panels. Oh, and there's the hair dye that's less toxic. And now brown-haired Warner says he's been the lab guinea pig on that one.
This is a chemistry experiment. This isn't a product yet. But, you know, obviously, it's on my head.
In Wilmington, Massachusetts, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
And finally, police officers on Monday spent a few hours picking up tens of thousands of dollars along a busy Ohio highway. They don't know where the money came from. Authorities checked with the FBI and armored car companies. No one reported any cash missing. I know what happened, though. Somebody probably just left the money that they were going to pay for gas with on top of their car. So thousands of dollars all over the highway. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles, online at marketplace.org. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Clinical trials are some of the most important and expensive things that drug companies do, so they're outsourcing.
The number one reason why companies come to Russia is that they can enroll patients in Russia anywhere from 3 to 20 times faster than in either North America or Western Europe.
I'm Kai Rizdal. The doctor is in Moscow. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.